March 2015 of Plum Park.
Flow study plan, and in February, the, well, let me back up here. The FFOM directed us to do three things after that December 18th meeting. Get the study plan to the study review working group. Do a plunge pool condition assessment during the February outage, and then initiate a take permit associated with the study plan. In February, we dewatered the North Fishway, put pumps in, and really drew the water levels down to just wet rock. And we engaged McMillan Jacobs to evaluate the condition of the lower plunge pool of the AWSS and the traction water sluice gates that are in the diffuser area. This was to support the fish attraction study plan and to determine whether a second generating unit can discharge into this area. Generally, it's to evaluate the condition of a component of the facility that provides a backup to attraction water in the North Fishway units. I have brought Jamie Schick here from McMillan Jacobs. He's a geotechnical engineer, and he'll go through his report, which was also posted on the FCOM website along with the agenda for this meeting. So, Jamie?
Okay, great. Thanks, Chris. Okay, so thanks, everybody, for your time. I'm basically going to run through, and some of this might be very obvious to this crowd, but just a little history of the site, and then talk about what we did, what we saw, and our scour evaluation. So the purpose of this is to essentially get a good look at the rock. The plunge pool is in rock. It's not a line plunge pool, so we're hoping to use that for this second powerhouse that they are looking at the facility. The proposed site is located right here. The plunge pool is right in the middle of the bullseye there. So this is just a quick schematic of what would happen is that you'd have a penstock coming around, small power facility with water being released from the current plunge pool. So there are some flow studies that are going to be going on this summer. They're going to be using up to 800 CFS going through this unit, which is similar to what's been going through there in the past. So there's no increase in the flows above what this plunge pool has been experiencing. The pool was built, constructed in the 50s. It doesn't have any liner when it was initially constructed. There was no reinforcement in it at all. And it operated nearly continuously into the early 90s when the Corps did some inspection and realized that there was quite a bit of damage there. And so they went in and they did a fairly extensive rehabilitation, scaled a lot of roof material off, did a pattern bolting, straps, shotcrete. It was a fairly significant amount of effort. So since then, it's been operated periodically, but not as a continuous fashion, which has some benefits and some drawbacks because it's exposed to the freeze-thaw effect. Essentially, what we were going to do is go in and inspect, see what we find, and do a scour analysis to sort of evaluate what the impact of the test studies would be. So, just like Kurt said, we accessed with a crane basket down into the plunge pool. It was dewatered and ready to go on February 16th. We completed work there and did some additional mapping in the fish ladder on that following day. A couple of pictures of what it looks like. So the floor is right here at the bottom. This is the right side, or what would be the west side of the plunge pool. You can see the bolts here, the straps that are going across. There was a cable mesh that was draped at one time,
and you worried about
and then shotcrete over much of that surface. Bolting was on approximately a 6 by 6 foot pattern. There's the back. Only spot bolting in this area. A little bit of shotcrete here where there's some highly fractured or more fractured rock. And then on the left side, which is the east side, river's off to the right here. Similar ground support on that side as well. So this is a view of the right wall. The flow contact that I'm calling out here is basically there are two basalt units that are exposed in the pit. Most of the pit is made up of what's called locally called a P1 unit, or P unit, excuse me, and the lower 10 feet is a P1 unit. The only evidence of scour that we saw during the inspection was right in this little area right here. As it turns out, from a rock quality standpoint, there was a zone of highly fractured rock. This is about a 2 foot long tape there, so maybe a 4 to 6 foot diameter space tucked in behind some bolts. It's pattern bolted above this and to either side, so it's fairly well confined in that one area, but it was an area where there was some more fractured rock. So essentially since the early 90s, it's corroded back maybe 3 feet, 3 or 4 feet in that one location. The other thing I'm going to actually go back to note, the lower, here's the top of the weir here. So you had static water pretty much across from there. Most of the wire mesh is gone. It's been weathered away. It's oxidized. It wasn't intended for quite that much of a water environment. And there's been a fair, it's kind of hard to tell, but I believe if there was shotcrete on there, most of that has been washed away as well. There's just a fairly thin veneer on that area. So basically the scour analysis that we did was called the Annandale method. George Annandale created an erodibility index where he takes different parameters of the rock and comes up with his erodibility index, and you rate that relative to stream power. And he's come up with a graph using cases where you've had scour, which is the solid dots, and cases we haven't, which is the hollow circles. Here's his erodibility index. Here's stream power, essentially the energy that you're putting onto the rock with the water. We evaluated three conditions here. The P unit, which is the upper unit, is a more competent rock, widely spaced fractures, higher strength. The P1 unit is actually a flow that came out in advance of the upper unit, so it's a more vesicular, generally lower quality rock. And we also looked at the area where we actually were getting some scour that, understandably is relatively close to this sort of cutoff line, which is probably why we're seeing some of the scour that we've seen there. It's a quick presentation, but essentially from a standpoint of amount of scour that we've seen over the last 15 years, 12 years, very limited amount of scour. Essentially, it would suggest that the reinforcement that was done out there has been working quite well. There hasn't been any cracks in the shotcrete or signs that there's blocks moving at all. There's a pattern bolting above that one scour spot that's located at the bottom, but everything above that's well supported, so I don't really see any way for, if there was additional scour in that one location, having large blocks liberated from that. Yeah, sort of a toppling or a basal failure. Because the flows are similar to what they've already been experienced, we don't really see significant scour enhancing that hole. It's probably sort of eroded back to a somewhat stable, it's kind of a circular configuration. So going back significantly further would be challenging. It's also kind of off the axis, so you lose a lot of energy as you move away from the face into that hole. So what we did in the report is we did say that after like maybe midway through the test studies, we go back out and take a look. We wouldn't have the advantage of getting the whole plunge pool dewatered, so there'd be some limits, but we could certainly see if there's any sort of significant block movement or evidence that there's something.
Could check that hole.
Is that?
You could check that hole.
Well, it's below the weir, so we'd have to dewater down below the weir, which I've been told is challenging. So that would have to probably happen during the next outage to actually go back in and look at that hole, which would be an interesting thing to see what's happening. So with that, I guess I'll open it up to questions.
So I guess my question goes to the project. Have you guys reviewed this and feel pretty comfortable?
They reviewed the report and it looks good.
Okay.
Yeah, and they went down to structural and mechanical engineers did go down through that system like that. So.
And they understand that, that graph that was showing there. I mean, that's a little kind of, I'll have to take a second look at that. But okay.
Yeah,
well,
okay.
The key is that nothing falls apart while we're doing the test. That's the, we don't want that or in the future, because that system has to be there for emergency use if the PUD's turbine unit goes down, correct? So you don't want it falling apart, the process, you know, and it doesn't normally get run that much, so this would be maybe a little more sustained duration operation of that channel than we've seen since the 90s, probably.
Yeah, it would be good to get a handle on how much runtime we've actually had in that launch pool.
Yeah, I was kind of wondering about that. It's like kind of on, off for
outages. It's been like
outages.
A year, maybe. So
how much did it take to pluck that?
How does that compare to a full season of tests? I don't know.
Yeah,
that's my biggest concern.
Sure.
If we run it from May through September, you know, that's a long duration. I'm not sure that thing holds up. That's my biggest concern.
Well, did you guys do the work on it for the shotcrete and the bolting? Is that a
core? The core did it, yeah.
Yeah.
Or core contracted
it. Yeah, contracted.
Did you find all the pictures?
The old, before?
Oh, yeah, what it looked like on that.
Yeah, I've got pictures of that.
Yeah.
Now, it was shocked. It was pretty shiny.
That's pretty weird.
And it doesn't look like it does like that now at all. All that, a lot of that shotcrete is gone, and the mesh is gone.
Pretty big voids that were backfilled too, from my understanding. They actually bolted up inch beams and backfilled the concrete on those holes. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember what it was like before that. It was a mess. So that was one of those PIES programs from the mid-90s.
Yeah.
That's why I'm concerned.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's one of those things that's, if it wasn't really fixed like we would like to have fixed it.
Right.
With concrete.
Fully lined.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So,
okay. So regardless of whether the study goes forward or the project goes forward, you know, we wanted to get this technical memorandum and inspection into the file to kind of provide greater assurances. The plunge pool, which we operate into, is in good condition. We have received comments from some members of the SRWG to raising concerns about the proposed study plan. Those would be addressed separately. And we're working with NEFS on the TAPE permit. So that's our update. If you have questions, let me know. We would like to pursue the study plan this year, but I can't tell whether that's possible or not at this point.
There's a few hitches in the Gittelbaum right now.
Very exciting.
This is good. So thank you.
Yeah, all right. Hey, thanks. Thanks, Jamie.
Thanks.
All right.
Thanks.
Report.
Sure.
So number four is the fish passage plan.
How about his AFF update?
Oh, AFF updates.
Yeah, I checked with one. Jeff was coordinating with Bonneville.
Yeah,
that'll take care of them.
Cool.
Just wanted to make sure he's fine with that, and then they may push off
on
the
day
or two,
and
that'd be about it.
I think
we're going to look up right now. Right.
Who else will be in the AFF this year? That's it.
I think I mentioned it a couple months ago about consideration whether it would be of value to do some more, but I haven't heard anything recently. So.
That was the question Jeff had. He hadn't heard of anyone using it. He just wanted me to double check, see if anyone.
I'll check in.
I don't think there's a huge need, like last time, late in the season. It'll be easier than last year. So just coordinate.
All right. Anything else before we move to fish passage plan? I think we're going to have a cover contest next year.
Yes, I mean, it's not
good
that, but, really?
What is it?
The Hand of God, Wertheimer Wall?
Yeah.
I've been here that long, if I can actually pour it out.
Been waiting for that.
That's a big deal.
So fish passing plan. Jesus.
The final's been posted, obviously. Some of you folks got your copy to Bill. I've got a couple copies for you I'll get. And we do have some new change forms, of course, that won't be in the final printed version, but we'll talk about them today. 15 bond 006, the powerhouse two midpoint operation dates, we're still waiting on FPC analysis, I think.
So Dr. Brennan, we had the RFP is kind of thrown for a loop, so he's been a little busy and fast. He's doing the analysis right now. I went back through and looked at the old analysis they did on some year lanes. So I'm going to need some serious, the low end, I looked at Wieland's work. The low end, I could probably be convinced we need to discuss that a little bit. Yep. Low end, I think there's some flexibility there. The high end, I'm going to need some justification of why we need that. Brad's going to take a look to see how much we've actually used it the past 6-8 years. But looking at the data, until these plates get in, we do see an impact to some year lanes. It wasn't as big as some of the other species, but there's still an impact. So I'm going to need to see some pretty good justification of why we need to flex the upper end of 1% for subs in August.
Well, I'm not asking to go above 1%. I'm just asking to use
upper
the range.
I said upper end of 1%. Okay. Above the midpoint.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
15 to 18.
Right. Unfortunately, you guys haven't been able to get to the analysis.
Oh, no, it's getting close. Real close. Yeah. Well, and don't forget, I mean, I asked him, he says he's probably not, but there's not going to be any biological problems. I mean, unless there's a lot more data there than he thinks there is, mm-hmm. you only have that a couple of units here and there running, so there's going to be there's not going to be anything to look at in this one watch. It's going to be like one or two units on versus six. So it's like, you're not going to see any biological data. I'm just looking to see how many we've even actually utilized it. But from the analysis they did in the July time frame, we did see a negative benefit for sub-yearlings when you run the upper end of 1%. So I'm going to need to be hard-pressed to figure out why I'm going to want to potentially increase injury to sub-yearlings in August. So the lower end, though, I think.
My issue on that is I want to wait and see. I mean, like I said before, summer I'm not so worried about, but we do have...
there's more modeling work.
Modeling work with a report due in September. Some folks are invited to go to Mississippi and take a look at it.
You enjoy that.
Evaluation of that.
Here, August is a good time.
September, probably. Maybe late September.
Better.
Anyway, I think we need to get that in hand before we make a decision. Yeah. Scott, you've been involved in that. You know what that's all about. So
yep.
We're just trying to get that. It's a due diligence issue.
I have no problem. I'm just saying, of the two topics, I think the low end makes the most sense and has that. It looks like we've got everything. I mean, it's like with the new camp group, as John's saying, it looks like it really cleaned up the draft too. So,
yeah,
maybe it's not
maybe
that
a whole sure. different. Well, I'll wait to see that one.
Yep. No, I'm that's why I was letting you have the charge on that.
That's
one.
The term side of it, the Gable side of it. You're on that.
Yep, mm-hmm. Lucky me.
You guys are. I'll just take a side watch.
Yeah, thanks. He's the hardcore guy. So, Dave, Brandon thinking.
He was pretty close this morning.
Okay.
I mean, it depends on what else he's got going, but it could be
next week. I think
another month.
Yeah, probably. I can't guarantee that, but
yeah, next week-ish, week after. Yeah. Like that. Cool. That's what I got.
All right.
So more to come.
Yep. And I'm also looking at this year. Really, are we even going to need to worry about that? Because you're not going to have enough flow to operate more than one or two units anyway. So.
Okay, well, we have two new change forms, 15 bond 010 for the Bonneville corner collector winter operations and TDA 005 for the ice and trash sluice wave winter operations, which pretty much everyone's all familiar with, but just memorialized it in the FPP so we don't have to do it via teletype. Everyone seems to be on board with it from project standpoint, and so I just want to make sure.
The actual change forms, are they on the web? Mm-hmm. I guess I haven't seen those.
Yeah. Basically, it's adding a section to Bonneville that says, during periods of spill that occur September 1 to April 9, outside of fish passage spill season, the B2CC will be operated, if available, to provide a surface passage route.
Where's that at? What's that section?
It'll be in a few. 2.2.7 for under spill management, also under juvenile facilities, winter maintenance, and juvenile facilities.
Okay, good.
Passage. And then it's the same, essentially, for valves.
Okay.
All right.
So everyone okay with it?
Absolutely.
Okay. So these will just be posted online.
To start.
But not included until next year's printed version. Project will know.
Common sense approach.
And then we had a recent addition from Mr. Hevlin. Regarding Lower Granite adult passage season dates. I didn't print out a copy, but.
Well, it seems that, to me anyway, it seems that the steelhead migration, the adult steelhead migration from the lower snake, is occurring earlier than what we figured in the past. And I'm thinking, well, this is a, you could blame it on climate change, warmer water earlier. So why don't we only have one moderate granite, and we were caught this year with these parts being late, and we couldn't get the ladder watered up and operating until March 5th. And there were quite a few.
It was the 4th. It was that Wednesday. Yeah, go ahead.
The 5th, though, was the first council. It was, I think, that first day, 197 steelhead. Then I looked down at the counts at Low Mo, which had been counting steelhead throughout the whole month of February, and there was like the last half of February, there were like 700 steelhead counted there. So figuring, why don't we ask the project to try to get the water or the ladder watered up on February 15th next year?
So we took a look at Greg Moody did a quick look at past counts that went back to 2007 to kind of re-verify if there was any ability to perhaps look at even maybe going earlier, earlier in December if there was a need for a switch off. I think depending on the flow year that things are different, and so at this point in time I don't think we want to necessarily go there. Obviously, the construction has changed things because, routinely we're out for a month and we're back, except when we have a construction project. The last time we were out longer was the Lamprey new orifices on the floor and changes, and we were out longer that year. We hate to lose that ability, but, it just means we'll be coordinating if and when we have issues. I was informally told that the schedule for the JFF rehab did depend on having this having that outage available, so there may need to be some recorded. And to tell you the truth, this is back to our forms earlier. And there hasn't, in our form here today, been coordination of keeping a fish ladder out longer than the 1 month we anticipated. But it may well be that their construction anticipated coming in and making that request. So we may see that as a fallout of this change form. I think we had a hard time suggesting that we had adequate data to support that it wasn't a good idea to allow passage as much as possible, as long as we're able to get our work done. I mean, we certainly want to make everybody recognize that, these are aging facilities and our ladders are the toughest part for us to get funded some of the things to keep them reliable. So if and when we have work that needs to be done, we're going to have to be in here asking for extended outages still, and we're just going to have to weigh, whether it's going to be better to try to take them out earlier and pull the screens earlier, or whether we're just going to, what we're going to do. But
well, I think I know we'll understand if you shoot for a February 15th date. We'll understand if there's some kind of a construction problem or something that it can be a week late or 2 weeks late on that. But just having the 15th date gives a little leeway. See, we didn't have any leeway this year. If maybe that there was a 15th date in there this year, maybe everything would have been backed up better to parts getting there earlier, to everything. It was just, it's like March 1st, there's steelhead in that tail race that are ready to go and wanted to go before March 1st. So I think it's just got to be more flexible to try to get the thing done and ready to operate earlier.
I think
I don't think we disagree with the fact that it appears that there's fish wanting to move. I do think that we just need to be aware that as we move forward, there's going to be challenges staying on schedule with the construction. And I think that what we talked about earlier, having these MOCs in place that we can watch, forcing people to write down what they're anticipating as outages so we can have discussions earlier rather than, as you know, this really was a mess this spring with how that worked out.
You think putting in the 15th date and makes it less flexible? Is that what I'm hearing?
In a way, because I don't know if you'll recall what one of the things that happened so we had come out with a schedule last fall. Mr. Moody generally puts out a schedule of what we anticipate for our outages. Yeah. We get that review. So when we knew we were going to miss that rewatering, I came in to the Fish Passage Change Form meeting as well as the next FPOM and verbally told folks that we were going to be not coming back until when we needed to, according to the Fish Passage Plan. So there was that leeway in there that even though we had scheduled to be out a month, we still were within the Fish Passage Plan to not bring it back till March 1. Okay, so you're changing that. Yeah. And so all I'm saying is, right, you know, I acknowledge that we're going to have to coordinate. And
well,
it all works. I mean, we're going to always come back with just trade-offs, you know, and reliability will be the biggie, and I think it can work.
Well, there could be some language that says, if you can, bring it back by the 15th, between the 15th and comes back into service no later than the March 1st.
Target the 15th.
I mean, that would allow still a little bit more flexibility.
But if it's just sitting there ready to go.
Yeah.
I mean,
can county continue on the 15th, too? If you bring it back early, will county
No. So, I mean, you know, that's something that I think Greg sent out a feeler as part of the FPOM agenda for people to look at, and there will be some more discussion, and feel free to have comments. At Lower Granite and Bonneville are the two places where we have ongoing every year work. I guess if the date changed to be fixed, but if we're able to leave the flexibility, we would still be not starting until, it's kind of
something. It costs even more in your contract. If you have to have a flexible start, having them on.
Well, and to be honest with you, talking about that right now, knowing full well that we're going into another 2 or 3 years of construction at Lower Granite, where we're likely to not be able to, where they've already built into their construction schedules that they're needing that other, and we're going to have to coordinate that still. Not sure that it's really going to be feasible, but I understand the need to understand the timing of the runs as we see recovery. You know, it's to our benefit to be able to document that we're seeing more fish at different times that otherwise weren't being counted as well.
The conversion rates that we're not meeting easily met. This automated video counting, I mean, that's the sort of thing that might help us in this eventually, is to get to that and be able to...
What they're trying at John Day?
Yeah, with low numbers of fish, that might work actually pretty well, especially since it's pretty much one species.
Yeah, we're going to be real interested to see how well that works out.
Set her up and walk
away and let
her run, right?
So what's the history of Lower Granite? I'm not sure why... Those projects were only constructed with one ladder in the first place.
He's new.
Cost engineering.
Well, and I think one of the things that you might think about is that if and when you have time to start looking at data, even at the projects for us within Walla Walla, and that would be McNary, Ice Harbor, and Lomo, we generally have higher passage on the side with our powerhouse. And so our passage numbers were always... Seemingly, if you were to look at the data, you would say that operation of the powerhouse makes that ladder more attractive than the other ladder, you know, somehow, potentially. I mean, it's all just data and subjective analysis, but it potentially could have been a consideration. You know, I don't think any of us were here back in the late 60s helping with that decision, although Gary might have been, I'm not sure.
That even predates me.
And that's before the steam shovel days.
Yeah.
Oh, I saw that. I was there.
I know.
And I can address some of the little goose stuff on as far as the second ladder not being built. There are plans. There were plans on the books to build a second ladder, but it was deemed not necessarily because the Blue Goose ladder is the fastest one on the Snake River. So they didn't deem it necessary, and the bean counters cut it out.
Delay before they get to it.
So you, before you built it, you made a decision it was going to be the fastest on the system, and so you wouldn't build it, John?
Well, it was built in stages along with the turbine units, and so when they started getting data on how fast the fish were moving to goose, the bean counters decided it wasn't necessary to build the second ladder.
Oh.
So
they,
and also the run size were a little smaller back then.
So, interesting. Thank you.
70s.
So, is everyone okay with the target February 15th return to service of the ladder, but no later than 3-1? That way we don't have to...
March 1st.
Just 3-1. Okay. So I can work on that and then have it by the next FCOM for folks to look at. And I'll make sure to send it to you beforehand to make sure it's
okay. I'm fine with that.
That's great.
Thanks, Susan.
Mm-hmm. How do you do it?
Pretty smooth, Bill.
It's pretty smooth. I'd set that over.
Selling to 4-3 some potential. Do we want to talk about 4-3-4 and Lourdes is the chair of the task group?
Hell no. I agree to nothing on that.
What was this? What did Lourdes agree to?
Appendix J smolt monitoring protocol.
Yeah.
I thought maybe.
I just wondering where we're at on that.
There was actually a meeting last month. The FPC Oversight Committee got together and was discussing about
Oversight Committee. You're on that?
There is one.
God, no. I sent policy people to that. I didn't get to go to that. Richie Graves was there for an hour, and they talked about it, and they are going to start taking a look at reviewing what small monitoring has going on and where there's some areas where they could pare back and that kind of stuff. If there's some spots. I mean, there was talk, this year, I think, FPAC had suggested we start do some additional monitoring at Goose and Granite early in the season before you start transport. But then overall, there's some spots where we're looking at, could we reduce sampling? Do we need to have everyday sampling everywhere? Or could you go to every other day or something like that at some locations?
So are you, what are we on here? Is this
4-3-4.
4-3-4, which was actually something different.
Well, I'm just telling you what they're currently talking about, but I think that would fold into...
That's been going on forever. No, this is different.
What do you want?
This was basically between this committee and the Corps, and that was to determine what, and us, NOAA, to determine what minimum monitoring would be if we don't have SMP out there. So SMP is, and it sort of fits in. If you pull SMP out of a project, then what are we left with? Which is what this contract is about to some degree. And it says in there in the language, I think, I don't know if it's in the letter or somewhere, where you're trying to meet criteria for the buyout, for one. Mm-hmm. What is that? That's not well defined. It's not defined in the buyout. What is it daily, every other day, every 3 days? What do we feel is appropriate? Is it 8 hours a day, 24 hours a day.
We've had
some slight discussions on that. Not that much agreement. I think we were at odds. I was often at odds even with my own staff at a couple of the projects, particularly McNary in the past.
To some degree, I think, we could lay it out. NOAA could lay it out and say, here's what we expect it to be. And if you want to add to it, that's fine. But we need a minimum. But I'd rather have that be something that...
It'd be good to have a discussion of the merits. I'm not sure if you guys at Fish Passage Center have looked at some data since we had some of those discussions, and it seems like FPAC came back with a recommendation that filtered back to us through Paul Wagner in your shop of, for a couple years, could we look at increased sampling at Little Goose and Lower Monumental this year back to the every other day, and see if it really changed what was available and or management decisions that would have otherwise been made.
That's a longer term than just the year. I mean, I know what Goose was down to, I think, once a week. as
they were down there every, one was every 5 days, the other was every 3 days.
Yeah, it was very infrequent.
Just every 3 to 5 days.
That was a bit of a concern that it was that, you know, I don't have a problem with it. It's just, is that what we want, every 5 days, or do we want every other day, every 3 days? And the data that we look at probably ought to be a little broader than just the less, just those years at that project, but maybe across the board. What we've seen, what we've been able to pick up at other projects for problems as a result of the monitoring that we've done there.
Okay, well,
some biodiversity.
You have to look at what the monitoring is for. Now, in the purpose for the core standpoint, the, every 3 to 5 days is for fish condition to make sure they're not getting banged up through the bypass.
Now,
as far as the other requirement of monitoring fish runs as they move down the river and all that, that's part of the SMP contract.
So the question that came up frequently last year was whether even every 3 days was adequate when you're just looking for condition, because what we heard at McNary is that we have project biologists that they really rely heavily on the every other day sampling to help them determine. They, you know, it's a bigger project, that they don't have something that's gotten stuck somewhere that they can, you know, that's their primary detection for descaling. And so that's why when it came back that the every 3 days or the every 5 days, if we had the capability, could we accommodate it, that we agreed to accommodate it to see if in fact anything changes in terms of our ability. Because obviously when you're doing it every 2 days, it gives you a, you're a day sooner in the potential detection. Then there's the follow through to find out if it's really something you can control. You know, there's still uncertainty at a place like McNary last year as to how much of that was controllable, but we'll see as we move forward.
Well, yeah, and then there's the offset of how many fish we're handling, and I'd rather, you know, we're trying to cut back on that too.
That would be nice to have some guidelines, because there's a lot of, you know, to me, as we're talking where we are right now about concerns about the biological services, and people wonder, you know, about a qualitative assessment, you know, my recollection was that there was a lot of differences between projects in terms of things like sample sizes. Now, some of that's been consolidated a little bit, but it was never just a uniform program where the Fish Passage Center had guidelines and all of the staff did the same thing at every project. Some of them did, you know, every 5 fish, they'd set one aside and do a more comprehensive look. Some people were doing, like Little Goose, long before anybody had concerns, was where they had time looking at lamprey numbers and creating a spreadsheet. They weren't putting it in the Fish Passage Center database, but the staff, you know, were. So there was a lot of stuff going on, and it's not clear to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, that it. So it's really hard when people come back and start asking us questions and say, well, how are you going to have consistency with this program? And I say, well, what is consistent about the existing program at each site? You know?
Okay. So Tom's our chair, is that right? What I've heard is that he's going to
know what that
answer is.
There's
a lot of issues here. What I'd like to establish is kind of a minimum sampling effort that we say, at the minimum, at every dam, here's what needs to be done. That's a biometrician experience of all the people who have been doing this for years. Decide, is it every other day? Is it every 3 days? Do we need 24-hour sampling? Those sort of things. What are we looking at? I'd like to get that established as a minimum. That establishes the biop requirement. Period.
So
then if you want to do more, fine. Knock yourself out if you have the permit for it.
Yeah. He had the noise.
I think we could do that. I think it's a sample size issue rather than the duration, to be honest with you.
Yeah, well, frequency is an issue, though.
The duration could save us.
I'm concerned about 24 hours out. Okay, I mean, having
fish.
No,
I mean, if we could go to something that was less,
but less is more. Less is better.
Can't be.
So that needs to be examined. That's a biggie as part of the subgroup. Yeah, look at that smile. Yeah. moving into summer, new thing on the plate.
Trevor's chair.
We can move on, I'm chair.
All right.
Excellent.
Yeah, you're going to get a star from Richie.
You don't get to call the shots. You're just chair.
Charlie's wanting to comment.
Charlie, you need to say something?
Couple of comments. When we had the discussions on condition sampling in 2008 and coordinating that, we realized that some of the projects collected information that didn't fit well within the coordinated collaborated SBC 32 that combines both the smoke monitoring and the core needs. I know from that discussion and my recollection was that Gary and others, that we want to ensure that we maintain the data that we have at that site. That could be valuable. And the second thing I'd comment on, in the frequency of sampling, the frequency we need to take a look at, but I think the discussion at FPAC, the discussion with FCC, was that a four-hour sample may tell you that fish are going through a facility okay for that time period, but it's not adequate in terms of monitoring the population to find out how the population is doing, and that information, our consensus was, the FPAC, at that time, that a 24-hour sample was much more meaningful in terms of fish than facility operations. But a couple comments I wanted to share.
Well, okay. You're on the team, man.
So that those can come out in discussions as we move forward.
Yeah, the trade-offs. It's the trade-offs of risk the fish from not seeing something versus risk the fish from seeing
too many. Right.
I'm glad you're bringing that up because, you know, I've been working around on the system since 95, and this discussion was ongoing then, that when we first put in the flow-through pit detector at McNairy, we're going to stop handling fish.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We have never got there.
I remember Dave Herson, that was his issue.
And we've increased our tagging and our detection capability.
Yeah.
More representative.
Right.
So, I'm not talking about throwing this out completely, but how can we at least establish what we absolutely need to have? And then if there needs to be more for transport or for whatever, then that's on the table. I mean, we need those as well. Understand.
All right, so you're going to leave
SCP
this up?
Is not part of
Tom,
the
Tom is.
No.
I mean, I'm not talking about the SCP.
I already have you down as the chair.
No, it's the
chair.
It's already in the notes. No requires this.
No required project.
If NOAA wants me to be in charge of their project, then what's required is a buy-off.
I love that.
I'll give him a co-chair.
You want to make sure he has a buy. We have a buy-in.
I think FPC wants a part of this.
I think Dave wants it. I'm better looking chomped up a bit for that.
Tom did such a good job on
this.
So while we're having this chatter, I got an email from John. John, do you want to make an announcement of your update on the biological services?
Who's the winner? Contract goes to?
Yes, the contract has been awarded this morning, so at 11:29, it's official. So,
who?
The Blue Leaf Environmental.
Blue Leaf.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, that figures.
When's your meeting?
So,
next week, early.
So, John, now you remember from earlier we said that we would need to set up an informal teleconference. So now that we have a contractor, I'm not sure what your schedule is to start discussions with them. They probably have to accept the contract. There's still some paperwork that needs to be exchanged.
They already called me while we were on the conference, but
I haven't
set up an initial or discussion with them yet, so a little bit uncertain right now.
Okay, so anyway, you're tracking.
The contractor was Blue Leaf?
It's Blue Leaf, Mr. Timken. I think you know him already, though.
Okay, thank you.
Timko is his last name.
Okay, thanks, John.
Okay.
Anything else?
I'm good to see you guys.
So for task group updates, can we remove the AFF mod task group? Has anybody got a problem with that?
No,
it's like ad hoc when we need it.
Okay, so I spent some time on that today. I dug into it. Ed and I had a discussion about it.
Seldom seen actually showed up.
Not here.
I didn't think so.
He was at in the office.
I've seen Ed Meyer in years.
Ed and I were talking about was what do we end up with? You know, we know that we had. I was looking at the numbers this morning, and the mortalities in 13 were well over 100 adult salmon. So we've got a large number of fish in 13 that died, not many fish in 14. I don't have the number. But I'm thinking that at least I advise moving this to the inactive list, with a closeout assignment to write up what we did and why and what the result was. So, and if that's the team that does that, that's fine, or if it's John Verisich, that's fine.
Nice try. This is Verisich.
Can we include
this
year's
data?
And then we're a little concerned. We would like to know what happens this year as well. So, before we actually abolish this group. Not that these groups ever get abolished.
It's just good to enact this stuff.
I advise that, yes, but let's do it with a closeout.
Somebody needs to go on mute. Your phone is ringing.
Answer your phone. Because there was a lot of emphasis put on this. There was a lot of high level.
We had asked for an after action report of WBC, that kind of stuff. We never really got that. So I think this is
fine. Yeah, that's all I'm asking for is after action report, something that ties together the fixes with the potential results.
AFF.
You leave the room, man.
So we take one off and add one.
Ben's in charge.
In order to get off the test chair lead, you have to write the after action.
So basically what Gary wants is, 13, we had this much mortality. 14, we did this. And the 700 mortalities we had in 14. We think we were successful.
Starting in
and that way
2008, going forward to...
Oh, wow, nice. I like it.
Well, there's a lot of stuff on Tammy's page here. It goes way back. But, yeah, the last couple, 3 years at least summarized the fixes and...
Doug's not here. We can put him on task to do that.
Who's that?
Doug Baus.
He's on his own, doesn't he?
He is.
Hey.
He's moving right now. Stacking boxes like crazy. Attention.
So who was the chair on that one?
Chair Gersich?
Was I the chair?
He was the chair, and then I moved to Project Fisheries.
Well,
let's
you guys arm wrestle over, see who gets to do this then.
Well, we can work together. I mean, I think... Yeah. Summarize all those MFRs.
Is that bond op still going?
Synthesis.
Okay, yeah.
So the noise impact group, we can take that off there.
Yep. It's done.
Benefit task group still.
Pay trip off pretty quickly. Yeah, we'll do some studies. Okay.
I'm in and out, just like that.
All right. Anything else?
Dude, really
so the load there. Shaping guidelines.
The what?
Load shaping guidelines is another one that we've had on here for a long time.
Gary's the chair of that one.
Scott is, and I'm wondering if Scott's going to... It's a BPA document, and we certainly work with BPA on that, but it does. They do need to be updated. So, I mean, there's references in there that point to parts of the fish passage plan that no longer exist and things like that should be tidied up.
I don't stuff like that, though. I mean, that's,
I'm not trying to reopen the whole thing, although I think there needs to be some...
I don't disagree
it would
that there's some
benefit to do this.
Well, maybe or maybe not. Legal hasn't exactly said, yeah, go for it.
Well,
so, I'm trying.
That's my check. We don't need legal.
We don't need the legal stuff.
I do.
Okay, well, I think that they need to be updated. So
I agree. We're looking at it.
And then the split flow issue for Bonneville.
It's not going to be worried this year.
Not going to be, well,
you want to
have the flow to be able to split.
Do you want 2 units or do you want
more? You want 2.5?
Which one would you like?
Yeah, but for the future.
Yeah.
It's just because I might not be here next year.
Done.
So Ben,
you still got a few projects left.
And
this is your destiny.
Aren't you going for 40 years?
Yeah, maybe. This is 31, so
I'm double retired.
I want to retire with you, so can you stick around for a little bit longer?
No, a little bit maybe. Not 10. So this one's an easy one, I think. We just need a trigger for a second trigger in there.
Go at 56.
That kicks half of the flow over to first powerhouse instead of just one or two units.
Well, that's where we start with 2 units. If that doesn't do it,
you
can't
build.
No, we can do that.
Well, yeah,
not going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, basically, you start with 2 units, and if that doesn't do it, then you keep the half.
So, sometimes we do have enough. Yeah. And that's a decision that we can make and should.
Some years, but not
all
years.
Yeah, not every year, but this is an FPP change, and, you know, what's the trigger for that? That's the question. We just come up with
something. One of the questions is, we will probably someone like have a minimum of powerhouse, too, like a minimum of 2 units, and that kind of stuff.
Right, so. Yeah, there's still going to be the work you guys are doing. John will come after us if we don't. Something.
Well, actually, he was the one who was like, you guys really need to split more because you're still getting a little bit.
Yeah, I know. And that's the whole idea here. It doesn't, at that time of the year, it's an adult issue. It's not a juvenile passage issue. So.
We still have a fish count task group? Oh, God.
It's inactive.
Well, I have a question. I got asked a question about, like, Lower Granite Trap, when they remove fish for broodstock. Those aren't added back into the counts. And should they?
Oh, God.
Is the count window above or below the trap?
It's above.
It's above.
Yeah. They should be. Yeah, they got there.
No, they didn't. They were just winning.
They thought they got there. Should they? I don't know. I would say.
Probably.
Yeah. What are you going to do with that information?
Well, they're not right now counted.
Well, it depends because in a way it's an index. So that's always how we've always done it.
Then. Yeah, you don't want to.
You don't want to
overall population. You can go back and have that.
There's two different perspectives, right? Absolutely. I mean, it's a question. Well, because you monitor population status with those counts. So that's a good question.
If they're wild fish, they definitely should be counted.
Yeah.
Yes. Absolutely.
Well, I would.
But you have to ask her.
But if they're.
Is TAC getting any kind? Are they using the data? Are they taking that broodstock data at all? I imagine they are, but I don't know.
These are all hatchery fish.
It's right down the hall.
That are being taken out.
Well, they're false. I mean, the eyes are false. You know,
we don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. They should be counted. I mean, if that's our escapement point.
It's basically an escapement point.
Yeah. That's how you know. That's
unless all the people that are tracking that know that and are already.
Well, I'm sure TAC is actually so TAC's probably doing this. We gotta find out if they are or not.
Well, it's kind of silly not to. I mean, they know that they got to the dam. Yeah, the whole idea is how many fish we turn.
I can saunter down the estuary.
Yeah, because I mean. Everyone's using it.
Yeah.
Transport studies, everything's based on, well, that's going to be pits.
Well, it's pit. They already get that.
Yeah.
The traps got the pit. It's just the count at the window, if it's off by some percentage because of recollection.
What is the percentage?
I don't know. Some years probably more than others. Yeah. Last couple years probably not very much. Yeah. Years prior, probably
big,
a lot.
Big number of fish, yeah. Right? Depends on the run. Just seems to make sense to have.
So you're on point
for that. I'm a monkey.
Hey, by the way, Stuart. Stuart?
Thanks, Dave.
Thanks, Dave.
I
have more work to do.
Anybody else want to sign Tom something?
That's Bill's project. Your decision.
All right. So are we done?
We're done.
Anything else?
Nope.
We got plenty. Around. All right. This meeting is over. Thank you for calling in. Enjoy the afternoon.
Thank you.